Welcome to the Pensions Podcast for industry professionals and trustees. Brought to you by Lifetime Savings and PensionsTraining.com.
So welcome everybody to the Pensions Podcast. I'm here with Quantum Advisory and I'm here with Karen, who is a partner. Hey Karen, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So can you tell us a little bit more about your role here?
Yes, absolutely. I am a partner here at Quantum Advisory. I specialise in looking after the client service delivery, crossing across all our service lines, so administration, consultancy, actuarial. We are an independent financial services consultancy, and we're actually looking to provide sort of solution-based pension employee benefit services to employers, scheme trustees, and ultimately, possibly the most important, the members of the pension schemes.
Of course. So we're going to talk today a little bit about automatic enrolment. Now, I remember back in 2012 when auto enrolment came through. There was this mass panic, well, that was the perception anyway. So how do you think the industry has handled automatic enrolment over the last 5 years?
I think, in the whole, the industry has actually handled auto-enrolment pretty well. It wasn't sprung upon us, but all of a sudden it was a bit like the freight train. It was coming, all of a sudden it was there. It was an extremely technical concept. A lot of detail to it. There were a number of potential pitfalls. So I think, yeah, we can actually sit back and pat on the back to the employers and those that actually achieved it and auto-enrolled when they were supposed to. I think there are some real positives that came out of auto-enrolment as well. The first would be the requirement to adhere to so many timescales, deadlines, both in terms of processing contributions, but also engaging with employees to make this actually happen, that the supporting technologies have actually advanced far quicker than they might have had auto-enrolment not come into play.
Yeah.
And I think the second is, you know, we actually think that automation is not going to stop here and now. It's going to continue to evolve, and that will ultimately improve the processes, giving better outcomes for all of the stakeholders. So, again, your employers, your trustees, and the members of the pension schemes.
Okay, so one of the things that people are starting to pick up on now is that the term re-enrolment or secondary auto-enrolment, as I've heard it called. So can you give us an overview of what that actually is?
Of course. It's actually the process where the employer is coming back, if you like, at the second bite, and is required to re-enrol or put back into a qualifying pension scheme all of their employees who are not already participating in their pension arrangement. Happens every 3 years, roughly based on the employer's original staging date, but not quite. We can come back and touch on why that is. But at the point of re-enrolment, the employer is actually required to choose a re-enrolment date, and that can actually fall anywhere within a six-month time frame. The window itself starts 3 months before the third anniversary of the employer's staging date. So you have that window to decide when you're going to re-enroll your employees. The employer is required to identify the employees who fulfill the eligibility requirements for re-enrolment, put them back into a pension arrangement. Now, that can include those who have already been in and voluntarily or actively opted out of the pension scheme. It could be individuals who left in accordance with the scheme rules, so they didn't get their act together fast enough to come out within the 30 days, but then subsequently opted out of the pension scheme. So they may already have a small holding or pot within that pension arrangement. Or individuals where the contributions were reduced to those that were below the minimum contribution requirements. More unlikely, we suspect, because not many schemes would actually allow that scenario to come into play.
Okay. And is it also an opportunity for the scheme themselves to address some of the issues that they perhaps didn't get right first time round?
I think very much so. I think came back to the point about original auto-enrolment being quite quick and hurried. Yep. And I think this is a really good time for employers to sit back, take stock, and actually look at the big picture. So it's their opportunity to actually review and, if they want, actually fine-tune their pension scheme. Looking at various items of consideration, whether things could be more efficient.
Yep.
Obviously, efficiencies are extremely important, and they may have been tied down, bogged down a bit when auto-enrolment first came in. Does their pension provider actually give them the support and the service that they want when the schemes are established? Has the provider developed over that 5 year, you know, where's 5 years gone, but that 5 year window? And does the provider offer more services that the employer might now want to make use of and just not been engaging or talking to them about? Good chance to review the member communication. Any procedure changes, changes to the scheme, because not only auto-enrolment, we also had pension flexibility come in within the time period we're talking about. So that can all be tied in. Maybe member presentations will be useful, depending what proportion of your employees chose to opt out. If you're talking one or two, not such a big deal. If you're talking 30% of your workforce, you've got a bit of an issue with your employees.
There might be some issue there, yeah.
So maybe surveying your employees, try and engage with them. What's important to them? What do they want? And you could break that up if you wanted. I know we talked before the podcast started quite a bit about generations. You might want to break that into generations of employees. You might want to break it into those that are actually very close to retirement, what their aims are. But can be quite a useful tool for the employer to sit back and look at their overall benefit package. Other point, review of default investment strategies. Again, talked about flexibilities coming in. If they set an auto-enrolment investment strategy as a default back in 2012, we've then had flexibility. They might want to look at it. Are they actually allowing those that might want to take tax-free cash sums or drawdown facilities? Is it allowed within their scheme?
And do you also think that, I mean, again, going back to 2012, a lot of master trusts were set up.
They were.
And some, you know, obviously some very large ones, some European ones set up in the UK. But there are also quite a lot of small ones. And, you know, some also may be deemed less scrupulous than others. Do you think this is a good chance for employers to actually have a look and just make sure they've got the right provider?
I think it's a great opportunity, and our experience is we have actually seen clients that we work with changing provider in advance of their re-enrolment date coming up. It's been a good trigger for them to say what's changed, who's offering, what sort of pension arrangements, what's suitable for me, and actually move from one provider to another.
And what's a good sort of lead time to, you know, not get caught out again?
Oh, you're going to review your provider. I think to do the process properly, to actually carry out your due diligence, have a beauty parade, talk to several providers, potentially do site visits, look at what their systems are, and then launch, you want to be doing that minimum 6 months, but ideally a 12-month window.
Yeah.
Again, not to hurry these things, to make sure that everything is exactly as you want, and to bring your employees with you. Because ultimately, if you're going to that length, what you're looking to do is have 100% enrolment, or as close as you can possibly get.
And what, you know, with that in mind, what are the key dates that are coming up?
Well, we're actually just past one, which was the 1st of May 2017. That was a key date for any, and funnily enough, when I was looking at this, we were calling them the newer employers. So define new, I suppose, in the world of pensions, new is quite a long time frame. But that would be any company that was set up after April 2012.
Yeah.
They immediately got the long stop staging dates, and those started from the 1st of May 2017. Will run forward for a couple of months. And so those employers, you know, even if you set up after 1st of January 2013, you could have 1,000 employees now, and you would just be hitting your first auto-enrolment date.
Wow. Lots to take in if you're a growing employer.
Yeah. Hopefully they've had it on the radar for quite a while. But, you know, we are so used to talking about re-enrolment, but for some companies it is their first enrolment date.
Yeah.
The next one we're going to have that's quite critical, I would say, is April 18, when we actually see an increase to the minimum contribution levels.
Okay. And also next year, I think it is, the contribution levels are set to rise. Mm. So, I mean, that could be bad news for some. So how should employers, you know, actually be handling communications of this?
I think it's really, really important to sit back and look at the communications. And communications have sort of formed a theme through everything we've talked about. They need to be positive.
Yeah.
You need to be saying to your employees, ultimately, no pain, no gain, but a higher contribution level should lead to a higher pension or benefits at retirement. More in, more out. Simple equation. So keep the message simple, keep it positive. I think there does need to be an element of sensitivity. Reduction in take-home pay for some will be painful, will be emotive, and some individuals will have opted out for a very good reason. Obviously, the impact to pay is going to hurt more those that are actually at the lower end of the earning spectrum.
Yeah.
And they're not going to welcome being shoehorned into pension, particularly if the last time they were put in was 18 months ago. They do the, I told you I wanted out.
Yeah.
I'm in again. So, you know, it is important, and I think even if you're re-enrolling now, it's good to start communicating with the employees that, okay, this is the contribution rate now, this is what it's going to have to go up to next year.
And do you think the employers in general do a good job of educating the employee as to, or do you kind of think it's not their problem to a degree?
I think it absolutely varies from employer to employer. It depends on how crucial they see the pension as part of their overall employee benefit package, whether it's just an add-on and they want to focus on some of the more fun benefits.
Yeah.
And maybe that's driven by the age of their employees as well. So is it more important to have overall flex packages, bonuses, those type of arrangements, or does the employer view it very much as pensions being a key linchpin to that provision?
We were talking before we went live about, you know, some of the newer, maybe millennial type companies. Mm. And, you know, it seemed to me, well, if I imagine an office, you know, there is this overriding sort of, they want to look after their employees. You know, that Google culture, you know, they want to give them, you know, the free fruit. They want to, you know, some of them have got slides and bull pits in there.
Yeah.
I actually think that as these companies mature, you know, actually looking after their staff is already embedded. You know, so maybe pensions does become a more prominent issue as the company grows.
Very likely. And as their employees suddenly become more attuned to the fact that, okay, I've got my house, I'm on the property ladder, I've got through the initial thing with kids, okay, there's the saving for the kids' university,
yep,
but there might be inherited wealth to help cope with that. And at some stage, those employees are going to turn around and say, I need to retire at some point in time, and what's been done to do that? So I think you're right, as it grows. I also think it depends who owns the pension arrangement.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, your old DB schemes very much were the provenance of the FD.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, the funding costs involved. Nowadays, the DC tends to be more HR, and maybe with HR owning them, I dread to say it, but maybe they become far more an integral part of the overall package,
yeah,
which can only be a good thing.
I completely agree. So, you know, with all these new millennial companies that are out there that are, you know, and all these people who have retired with big pots and started companies, if they've suddenly grown, what advice can you give them if they're looking to set up their first automatic enrolment scheme right now?
If they're going right now, okay, look at their current arrangements. they will have a pension plan in place of some form.
Yeah.
You know, we've had stakeholders forever, so, and those requirements. So they will have something in place, but they need to check that it can actually be classified as a qualifying scheme. That means it needs to tick a number of boxes, both in terms of the contribution levels, needs to have a suitable investment default, and has to be accessible to all of their employees. And their current arrangement may not, or it may fall short on one of those criteria. If it does fall short, it's not the end of the world. Normally, some relatively simple amendments can be made and some changes, and the job is done. However, if it's a very old scheme, it may be that the contract simply cannot be rewritten and a whole new pension scheme needs to be established. And as we've already touched on, that can take a while.
Yeah, give yourself plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Don't think it's 2 months away and I'll start looking at it in a month's time. Checking your figures as well, because depending how many employees you do not currently have in pension provision, it's going to have quite a large impact on your own budgets as an employer. So look at them, decide what definition of pensionable pay you want to be using, decide what level of contributions. Are you going to go in with the minimum, which quite frankly I think we all know is not enough, but are you going in with the minimum with a view to increasing, or are you going to provide a reasonable, decent package from the outset, which would probably help a bit more with the employee communication and engagement. Training your HR and also taking any necessary fixes to your payroll if you've not done this before. And I think it is fair to say the payroll providers have, they're unrecognisable from those that we were dealing with in 2012 in terms of their processes dealing with auto-enrolment. Now all of the payroll providers can do it. But payroll tends to be something, it's just been there. No one's really known how it works. So look at your payroll, make sure it can run the reports you want, can integrate with your pension provider's systems, can get these letters, can keep the process as straightforward and smooth for the HR team as it possibly can be. But also train HR, because they are the face of your company that engages with the employees. They're the ones the employees are going to come to with questions. They're the ones that the employees are going to run to if the autumn enrolment is badly handled and not well communicated. So make sure both of those parties actually...
There's nothing more frustrating than going to HR and having the, I'll go and ask for you, is there?
No, they expect them to know. And especially if it's a pension scheme that's provided by the employer, they're going to view it as being, it's your pension scheme, why can't you tell me the answer? So a bit of investment in training for HR, I'm sure your HR colleagues will love you for it.
Brilliant. And anything else that they should be... be looking out for?
I think the communication. Make sure there's no surprises coming up on the employees. Do not do a deduction from payroll without giving them ample warning that it's going to happen and the letter coming out the blue saying,
you can imagine that,
hooray, you've been auto-enrolled.
Yeah.
I think that'll have the automatic effect of, and I'm coming back out again. So, good communication. And the other one is, you know, the famous last hurdle, and I think it has been well enough reported now in the press, but at the end of the day, once everything's done and dusted, you can breathe your sigh of relief, everyone's been enrolled or re-enrolled, sit back. Well, actually, you have one final piece to do, and that is to actually complete your declaration of compliance on the pension regulator's website. Now, you need to register in order to do that. Once you've registered, it's a straightforward process. It's an online form that takes 10 minutes. It's not a big hurdle. You have 5 months to do it from the date of your staging date. And it should be very simple. Just make sure you set that diary note. Make sure you do it. I think there is so much publicity around auto-enrolment that any excuse as to why you didn't comply is just going to fall on deaf ears.
And what sort of fines are we talking about for those that don't? Is there...
I haven't actually seen the quantity of any of the fines reported on. We're just getting into the stage that the pension regulator's coming out and saying these companies haven't complied.
So we're waiting to see what.
I think the fines can be related to size of employees, size of company. They can range into the thousands of pounds, though. They're not small. I think your initial fine is probably palatable. I think the second time you get a slap on the wrist, it probably increases exponentially. Yeah. And this is just, it would be such a silly thing.
For the sake of...
For 10 minutes. Yeah. And just remembering to do it.
And who should take responsibility for that? I mean, is anybody, you know...
I think the best place for it to lie is probably with the HR team at an employer.
Keep everything...
They, you know, ultimately they will have some engagement into payroll. Pensions probably do sit under the employee benefit arena that they're dealing with. It makes sense to give it one home and one area of responsibility.
So we've had this period of stability for 5 years. Obviously, we've got election fever, or maybe not gripping the nation. I mean, if there's anything that you wouldn't want, you know, interfered with right now, or you maybe would want something changed, is there anything that would make life easier?
Auto enrolment wise, or pension
just
in general?
In general.
I think we have to stop changing the tax treatment of pensions. We just need to leave it alone, or one that would personally make me cheer is disband it. You know, actually say, okay, the lifetime allowance now is far too low, if we're being honest. It's not motivational to encourage higher paids to be saving for their employment. Higher paids are running companies. Companies are running auto-enrolment, trying to get their companies to save... their employees to save. So we're not having a positive encouragement coming out with that message. The tapered annual allowance, well...
We were talking the episode before this. I think it will be the episode before this, to Ian Neil of Aries about this exact thing. And, you know... He's just saying that it's just way too... I mean, we've got about three different types of treatment there, depending on which scheme you're in. It's just ridiculous.
Well, you know, we have different for lifetime allowance, then we have the tapered allowance. And for a human being to try and work out their impact of tapered annual allowance and their benefits, particularly if it's someone lucky enough to still have some DB element of benefits, no chance, falling foul constantly. I think if they were... any government were to make any change to tax-free cash sum benefits, it's probably the death knell for pensions. And, you know, for having gone through auto-enrolment and all the active encouragement, why would you do something that will just increase, ultimately, the opt-out rates?
Well, I also think there's an element here that the, you know, with the worker campaign and everything that's also, you know, been going on, this whole message about saving.
Save.
And then your message when you actually come to retirement is a bit contradictory. It's, you know, well, yeah, thanks for building up that pot for us to tax.
Yeah, thanks for building up the pot, and you've done really well, and you've got it over the £1 million, and we'll have some of that, thank you. But, you know, and would anyone previously have questioned someone who had a DB benefit of more than £60,000 if it was an exec? No, they wouldn't. Someone that had done 40 years and ended up in a PLC with a larger pension than that, it's understandable. And now we're putting all these criteria in.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So I think we cannot say with the regime as it currently is that we are actively encouraging pension provision.
Well, the good news is that all of these politicians seem to be changing their mind anyway, so there's hope.
Yeah, they're happy to change, so maybe they'll listen to this podcast.
And where can our listeners see more information from Quantum Advisory? Are you at any shows in the near future, or you got some resources online?
I think the best thing, anyone who wants to see a bit more about us, is via our website, which is
quantumadvisory.co.uk.
On that, we do publish blogs. We publish some up-to-date thought pieces that we have, some articles, and it just gives a bit of the view that we have across the firm on certain hot topics.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Karen.
Bye.